The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome, Friday, and welcome especially to all of you listening from all over the world who are looking forward to hearing things, as am I, from Admiral Cooper and his team of extraordinary agents. We are especially bringing some information tonight from one of his agents who is slightly under the weather, shall we say, and leave it at that, and he has just been releasing a lot of things that have never been heard or seen of by anyone. Since the war and even during the war. This is a special program for all of you, especially who understand what World War II was really all about and the ramifications of the incredible influx of German nationals to Argentina, Uruguay, and all over South America, for that matter, and here to the U.S. under Operation Paperclip. Hello, Harry Cooper. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing great. If I was any better, it'd be illegal.
You'd be intolerable is what it would be.
I've been told that already.
I know. I'm not going to say anything. Now, we should mention very quickly the next Harry Cooper expedition into the past during the present is scheduled for when?
To South America. We're pinpointing March for an expedition down there back to Paraguay, where we found the resort where Mengele used to hang out, and Argentina, where Lawrence de Mello, an incredible researcher, has found the house where Gestapo Mueller lived.
That's an amazing discovery, and getting to see pictures of that when you were on several months ago, just remarkable.
Right.
What's still there remaining and waiting to be found.
And we're going to go back and visit with a lot of his friends. We're, Lawrence is going to have an asado, which is an outdoor barbecue, which is not the same kind of barbecue we're used to, where you put sauce all over the meat. This is just outdoor cooking of the beef and all the rest of the stuff that goes with it, the social hour, et cetera. So that's on the tap. Also, we're going back into Paraguay.
And you say, you're going to be meeting with some of Mueller's friends?
Yeah. We met with some of them when I was down there. What was it? It was a few months ago. But, yeah, July I was down there.
Yeah.
Froze my panty off down there. That's dead of winter for them. There wasn't any snow, but it was cold and crummy.
Right. But the point is, whoever goes on this this next patrol expedition with you gets to participate in that. Is that correct?
We've had some people want to go along. We're not sure we're taking outsiders yet because there's a lot of
I understand.
Sensitive stuff.
I understand. All right. In any case, going to South America to walk in the footsteps of history as it transpired after and during the war, but especially after the war, is an extraordinary opportunity. It's an unduplicatable opportunity that you will never get in the rest of your lifetime unless you take one of these trips. So hopefully you'll give that some thought. All right, my friend, what's been going on? I know a little bit more than I'll say on the air, but tell our listeners what's happening and what we're going to look at. First of all, everyone, go to the guests section at Rents and look under Harry Cooper's name and load up the photographs, okay? So you're ready to go when we get to those. All right, so what's happening?
We even had a couple of calls from Germany within the last couple hours asking how to hook onto your show, so I walked them through it, and they're going to struggle to stay up. It's 4 o'clock in the morning in Germany right now, so
right.
To my friends over there who are listening, dawn is only 3 hours away. You'll be getting up. I'll be going to bed here.
Yeah, well, very good. And a special hello to all of you in Germany. And I know the situation over there very well. If you've been listening to the program, hang in there. It's very tough. And I hope for good things in the near future for all of you.
We're going there in September, October for our Southern Patrol. And we'll talk about that in a little while. Anybody who wants to go with us over there is welcome. We'll be given details. We go to a lot of historic places there, but
you
lead the show, and I'll just talk about whatever you say.
I don't know how many years ago it was, but for those of you who don't know, I have heard stories about Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun surviving and going to South America, Argentina, in the Pacific, to live out their lives, and they did. This is the man who brought the story to the world. He got from one of his associates in Europe, a man who was in the SS and was in the bunker at the end, a typewritten document of his testimony as to what happened there. A more extraordinary document doesn't exist. Harry brought that out in his first book called Escape from the Bunker, which is getting close to 25 years ago now. And when he began doing these programs and I found out about all these things, I pushed him real hard to revise and update and upgrade the book, which he did. And it is called Hitler in Argentina. One of the most extraordinary books of our time, and you'll see it there when you load photos. It's also has a companion volume called Hitler and the Secret Alliance. It's an indispensable set of books, especially Hitler in Argentina, that no one who claims to be a student of history cannot read. You have to read it, or you won't be able to lay claim to that title. You read this book, and all of a sudden, 800 different things come into focus or begin to do so, and it is just an astonishing thing. So since that time, 25, 30 years ago, when you first got that document, you've put together a number of agents. You call them your SEIG agents. They are undercover, some deep cover, but they are producing and have produced for you so many revelations and disclosures that we would never know if it weren't for you assembling this team of people. Tell us more about these people.
That's what sets Shark Hunters apart from anyone else. Decent, honest researchers or shifty people, we know who we're talking about there. They stumble forth and do their own research. A lot of it is in libraries. I know all the people that have come out with Hitler escape type books have read my book. Dr. Jerome Corsi has told me that my research is outstanding. It's the best. And he said he's got my book in his library. And we know there's a guy who wrote a book that came into being as a TV series. And some of the people who have read his book say there's passages that read an awful lot like my book.
Avgarsh, you've been plagiarized like there's no tomorrow by a lot of fake researchers and quick buck artists, and that's unfortunately the world we live in today. But you have the book. It is the book, and anybody reading that book is obviously changed for the better in terms of understanding the world we live in, why it is the way it is, and what really happened, and how much incredible power over the media a certain group has. This group has rewritten the real history of World War II, the people involved, and they, in many ways, want to constantly control everything. That's the nature of their whole ethos of life. But you've got the book. It's there, and I hope all of you who haven't read it get it. Look, I'm looking at the cover right now. You'll see it there in photos. There's a picture of Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun. He's standing with her, and behind them, above her head and off to his left shoulder, is the beautiful home that they lived in for 10 years in Argentina. It was built by the Mercedes family, and above them is this enormous six-engine aircraft, which we're going to talk about tonight and reveal things that have never been revealed before. Below them is a submarine, as if to say, no, that is not how Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun got to Argentina. Look up, and you'll get the picture. All right, go ahead.
Incidentally, the picture of the estate, I took that picture when I was there the first time in 2008.
Yes, you did. And you got inside the house, which hasn't been lived in since Adolf and Eva left it in 1955-ish.
55, right.
And the pictures of the inside are just extraordinary. And if you happen to have an extra $40 million laying around, I understand you can buy that estate right now.
No, the price has come down. The price has come down. It sat on the market for all these years at 40 mil, and a few years ago, a wealthy farmer from the Cordoba province was buying it for 27, I think it was, but he was going to build a resort hotel there. We don't know if he was going to tear down this estate or build his hotel next to it, but that deal went in the bucket. Now it's up for sale again for 22 mil.
Oh, that's getting close to our range, Harry.
Well, yeah, all I need is another $21,990,000, and
that's
I can
right.
be there.
We're there.
I've got $100 I can throw in.
There you go. That's remarkable. It's down to get, well, you know, in the real estate market now, it's not unusual to see houses in those prices. They're up there. But this is a real piece of history, and no one has lived in there.
It's a piece of property, too. Besides the estate manor you see right there, behind it in the woods there are quite a few guest cottages and little buildings. There's one small building, not much bigger than an outhouse, that has the generator in it, a small generator, but there's a small stream that they've diverted right through the place in the floor, and they got a little paddle wheel down there, and it turns this generator and provided the electricity for
hydropower. How interesting.
Right. That was the backup. In the boathouse, they had a generator with a diesel engine. They had another little house where the cooking was done. Go to my website, sharkhunters.com, click on previous tours, and go to Argentina of 2008. And boy, there's a ton of photos. Back in the day, Hitler was living there, and up until fairly recently, you could only get there by boat or seaplane because there was no road. But now I understand they've built a public road, goes around behind the place, not too far distant. You still have to march about maybe 1 or 2 kilometers through the woods to get to the estate.
Right.
Still empty.
Well, when I saw those pictures the first time, I will never forget it. That big table, that enormous table.
Yeah.
Just imagine. And then
solid
when you look,
wood.
Yeah, when we look at the pictures that that you have of Hitler in the Eden Hotel annex with the Eichhorns, taken in 1947.
And yeah, he looked pretty good for a guy that was dead for 2 years, didn't he?
He did. He's absolutely quite remarkable. You understand that there was so much going on there. And then you look at the hidden resort hotel, we'll call it, that you mentioned Mengele went there, but they apparently all the high-level Third Reich people went there for meetings routinely. And
right.
We know from your work with Holdeen Goebbels that, well, there was a lot going on there.
Mm-hmm. The reason, if I can be patronizingly money-wise here.
Yeah.
I'm lost. Jeez, this is a late hour for me. Anybody who wants to join Shark Hunters can get 6 months free membership if you buy one of those two books, either one, doesn't matter, or if you buy both of them, you get a year free membership. You've been a member for, what, 5, 6, 7 years
How are you going to lose with that? I didn't know you were going to do that.
Yeah,
you buy two of the most fascinating books you could ever buy and get a year's membership in Shark Hunters. Well,
it's Christmas. I'm trying to be a nice guy.
Well, you're winning. You're doing it.
I know that's out of character for me.
That's all right. Tis the season.
All your listeners have to do is just either call or email and tell us which one of the two books they want for 6 months or both books for a full year of membership, free, no charge, except you pay for the book plus shipping, and
wonderful.
The details are right there.
Yeah.
And, boy, oh, boy, once you join, you're going to stay, I think. Most people do.
There's no other organization in the world, online or off, that really discovers and rediscovers history as it really happened, like sharkhunters.com. It just doesn't happen. And you know if you've been listening to us, all of you out there.
Right. As I was beginning to say before I got myself sidetracked, unlike the other researchers, the honest ones and the dishonest, we have a whole range of people in all over the world. Some of them are retired spooks. Some of them, like Pizarro, was never a spook. He was something else, but for reasons I won't say until after he's gone, why he got into it, and best we got. We got other spooks who are working deep in foreign government intel agencies. I got a call, what was it, 2 days ago, I think I told you about it, that as I've been sending out this hotmail to people in 77 countries, I got a call from this one agent who we call Peter Parker, and I was told that the intel agencies around the world have been waiting for this show tonight. He said the Russians love it because they want to see this information come out. The German and the Austrian intel agencies aren't overly excited. The Americans don't care. So this is where we get the information. The places we visit down in South America, we've been there. We've taken the pictures. But it was people like Pizarro telling us where to go and what to look for, who to talk to, because Pizarro was down there in 1969, armed with all this information and did all the legwork. And the same when we go to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
All the legwork is done. And so many, well, I think just about every book about Hitler's escape says that he rode U-530 down to South America. Absolutely not true. Some, like I keep mentioning Corsi because I think he's an honest guy, just a little misguided. He thinks that Hitler went down there. There's this other guy that wrote the book that they did the TV show about. Somebody sent me clips out of his book that when the boat was out to sea, Captain Wermuth opened sealed secret orders that sent him towards Argentina. Oh, horse feathers. The guy was on a combat mission. He had a full load of torpedoes. He was on his way to operate off of Halifax, and as he was halfway across the ocean, he got a radio message changing his patrol area to New York City. He had food on board for a normal patrol. He had diesel fuel, and he had a load of torpedoes. Why in the world would he take Hitler on board his boat to go on a combat patrol? That's, you know, that's out and out baloney on that book.
Right. But, well, we've got the more details on the real story of the transit from Germany and Europe to Argentina.
And as I told you earlier, there's some things I'm not going to divulge, and I'll mention
it
as we go
along. I'm not
going
to mention anything.
Okay. But the stuff that I'm not going to divulge on the show tonight, they're in the next issue of our KTV magazine, which will go to our members. And so anybody who wants a free membership, buy one of those two books, you get 6 months for free. Buy both books, you get a year for free. But this next issue that's coming out is just absolutely incredible. Like I told you earlier today, my internet hasn't stopped. Finally, Pizarro went to bed, I guess. But, my God, every so often, every couple hours, boom, here it comes again, more stuff.
Yeah, Harry kept emailing me. I get these emails with, wow. Yeah, over and over again. You can't believe what I'm getting. So, well, we'll disclose hardcore stuff, real stuff, which is what we want. That's what history is supposedly all about, the truth. All right. Well, let's go into our pictures here. All right. You've seen the books. You can see the Southern Patrol 2018, coming up September through October 13th. And it'll go to Munich, Nuremberg, Austria, and perhaps some things that aren't on the schedule yet. You never know with Harry Cooper. They're just unforgettable trips. Okay.
Well, there's a couple patrols. The first one is 30 September until 13 October, which is the Southern Patrol.
Yeah.
Munich, Nuremberg, Ingolstadt, Austria, Krumpendorf. We're guests of the Austrian Navy League for a luncheon and the memorial service, the Ulrichsberg group. They remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform they were wearing, no matter what flag flew over them, no matter what outfit. If they were honorable soldiers and fell in battle, they're remembered. Then the other one is 13 October until 20 October, the Bunker and Ruin Patrol. One of our members, Jeff Carson, we call him the Tunnel King. Anything the Germans built in that area, above ground, underground, still standing, or ruins, whatever, Jeff knows about it. And he's going to be guiding this tour. So the email address is there. Your listeners can send us an email. We don't have all the full details right now, but they can send us an email and say, hey, keep me on the list. Let me know, because within about two more weeks, we should have everything nailed down.
That's one of the things about World War II that a lot of people don't understand. The Germans, when the bombing began in 41, and they didn't start the bombing, by the way. The British started the bombing. The Germans began building underground. And how, just for example, in Berlin, how much is underground and how much is above ground?
Well, in the whole Reich area, where they were, experts have estimated that four times as much was built underground as what they built above ground. We're still finding tunnels and bunkers that where somebody had bulldozed the entrance shut. But over the years, erosion has opened a little hole or so. There was one we found. The hole was not much bigger than a watermelon, about 6 foot high on this huge pile of dirt, and about 6 foot or so up in the air. So you couldn't look in, so I stuck my arm in with my camera, pushed the button, came out and looked at it, and there was a hallway. So I put on my miner's lamp, slithered through the hole, and I walked back in this hallway a mile into the mountain, and there were hallways and offices both off both sides. Nothing in them anymore. No wooden door frames, no tables, no nothing. Just, but not junky things. Concrete walls with electric wiring. It wasn't operational anymore, but and pipes for fresh water in and ventilation stuff, all put into all just about every tunnel we've ever found. A very high degree of engineering, and this is why I say in most of these tunnels, and I'm getting beat up by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which we call the spit lickers. I'm getting beat up by them left and right. They say, "Oh no, it was poor old slave laborers. You can't take some poor, dumb, uneducated farmer and have him start digging tunnels. But not if you expect the tunnel to stay up. These were built by highly skilled...
Very sophisticated engineering.
Right. Engineers, stonemasons, and just incredible.
How did it feel going back into that tunnel, Harry? Maybe the first person back in there since 1945, 46? Who knows?
Yeah, it could have been.
How did you feel?
We found... I felt like... Actually, I felt like I wished I had some of my friends in there with me. I was all by myself, and for some reason, they took it upon themselves to change the frequency on the walkie-talkie, so I was blind in there. So after I got about a mile in there, and there was a fork where you could go straight ahead or left or right, and I decided, no, I'm all by myself in here, and nobody's listening to me on the radio, so I went back out.
Did you cover it back up when you left?
Doggone it, I forgot that part.
Uh-huh. Well, see, could have been your secret. Well,
yeah.
All right, just to give you an idea.
We marched off, and we made special effort to remember exactly where it was so we could come back. I should have written it down because it came back another time. I couldn't find the place.
No kidding.
No.
You still have that, you still have that picture you took of it? That one picture?
Yeah, but things change. You know, over a year or so, the rains changes the face of the earth. We found another deep tunnel that was meant for Hitler's escape because the entrance to the tunnel was only about, well, not even 1 kilometer down the mountain from his house in Bavaria. But it was another 2 kilometers back into the woods. This was meant to bring him through the mountain into Austria as an escape. It was being built at the end of the war. And it goes straight back for about half a mile, takes a zig to the right, and goes about a quarter of a mile, and then it just stops because that's when the war ended. But we can still see the bore holes in the wall where they were putting in dynamite, and we found some bore holes that still has dynamite in it.
Wow. That's real history. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, look at the pictures under the second patrol, the bunker and ruin patrol, and you'll get an idea of the things that you'll see on that one. All of you are welcome to go. Last tour, Harry even had, didn't you have 2 people from Russia with you?
That's right. You see that at the upper right-hand picture, the big guy in the blue jacket. That's Evgeny Kuznetsov from Moscow.
Evgeny Kuznetsov. I know him.
Yeah.
Yes.
He said that's a very common name because I was, way back years ago, I was awarded the Admiral Kuznetsov Medal for Humanitarian Service or something from the Russian Navy. And he said it's the most common name in Russia. So he was there with his dad. He's a huge big guy, about 6'6", and he's an engineer for oil companies in Siberia.
Well, the point is, wherever you're living right now and listening, you're welcome to go on these tours. So,
yep.
So all you got to do is give a call or email and get the details, and you can go. All right, we're going to take a short break here and come right back and start to go through our photos with Harry Cooper of sharkhunters.com. These are Pizarro photos, and we're going to learn things that no one has ever heard before. Stay with us. Glad to have you on board. Harry Cooper is here, and we're going to take a look at our photo journey now. All right, let's go down to number 4. But before we do that, not number 4, number 3, let's say a couple nice words about Pizarro, who may be listening, and wish him well. And I want to personally thank him for contributing so much to our knowledge of history. But go ahead.
Well, world. Yeah, he's Pizarro. Just I've known him since 1988, and I know his background, et cetera, which we're not going into here. But his research is absolutely unquestionable, and he just a month or so ago got word that he's apparently got cancer. And he's fighting that, so I had him get some of the product that you advertise here. What's it called? Carnivora?
Yeah, it works. It works in many cases wonderfully on people with immune system challenges, as they say.
Yeah. So he got some of that, and we're keeping him in our prayers. And on my other radio show, which is on Omega Man, the host, Shannon Davis, said a prayer right on the air for Pizarro. And in the email I got 2 weeks ago, he says, "Thank you for your email and your prayers, and in my eyes are tears."
Oh, nice.
Then he said, "Yes, your work and Shark Hunter's research are better and better in German and South American history." And remember, Dr. Corsi, who has a book on this also, sent me an email and said that my research is excellent, and he told me on the phone that my research is the best. Well, that's because I got this team out there that nobody else has. Other books, you know, they borrow from this book, borrow from that research, so they got footnotes all over the place. You won't find footnotes in my book because we don't copy from anybody. Everything we do is first person.
Right. Right. Okay. Very good. All right, Pizarro. Get well, my friend.
Yeah.
You got the right stuff?
Yeah, we'll have a beer together when I'm down there again, or out there in September. We'll have a beer together.
Very good. All right, photo number three.
Yep. I'll be sounding a little stiff, probably, because I'll be reading some of the emails that go with these photos. And in this one, he says, "Harry, you know, I had a long meeting with Otto Wermuth, the former skipper of U-530, that meeting was in the beginning of the 1990s, and I saw Wermuth at a crew meeting, they call that a Bootsbesatzung, of U-530, and here's a picture with me at the table." he's the guy with the phantom face there.
He has a white pie plate on his face, I see.
Yep, that's Pizarro. The other two guys were members of Shark Hunters, Charlie Grutzemacher. He was engineering officer on U-427, and when the war ended, they were in Norway. That was the only part of the old Reich that was still unconquered. And so he said they filled all their fuel tanks with diesel oil, and they filled all their freshwater tanks with diesel oil, and they put a bunch of the diesel oil in drums, and they were going to make a break for Tahiti, because the war was over. And then their flotilla commander said that he was going to personally shoot every officer on any German U-boat that tried to get away, because they were supposed to stay there and surrender on sight. But that was Charlie. I met Charlie. Charlie has a huge archive. He's passed away now. He was trying to sell his archive, worth a ton of money, but he had a very strange way of trying to sell it. You pay for it. I don't know how many tens of thousands it would be. You pay for it, but he keeps it until he dies. Well, I tried to tell him that doesn't make sense, but he died. His wife has been trying to sell it, his wife and son, but it's going to die, I'm afraid. And the guy on the right was Otto Wermuth, the skipper of U-530.
Right.
The one that did not take Hitler to Argentina. As I've said before on your show, Hitler was violently seasick if he got anywhere near the water. He was claustrophobic. Can you imagine the guy being tied up in a steel tube for a month or more?
That would be almost a fatal ordeal for me. I get terribly seasick. No chance. No
there
way.
There you go. And the same thing with Hitler, and claustrophobic to boot.
No.
So he continues in his email here. He says, "I had a long meeting with Wermuth, and he told me with a smile that in all the files you read that before U-530, I was skipper of U-853. And that's false. I never commanded that boat. Then he goes on to show, this is a picture that was sent by one of the crew members of U-530.
Mm-hmm.
That's picture number four.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows U-530 in Argentina. You see that huge big cutout in the boat by the, if you look back, there's one guy in black uniform at the bow of the boat. Then behind him, midships, there is another guy in black. Look, well, actually navy blue, but it's a black and white photo. You look right below him, and that deck is cut out. They were doing this to all the Type 9s toward the end of the war because they had a tendency to hang on the surface of the water when they were trying to dive, and it slowed up their diving time. So the later model ones from about 43 onward were built with that cutout.
When you say cutout, describe that in a different way. What should we be seeing there that we're not seeing there?
Normally, the hull would go straight back, and the deck would go straight back. But here, they've cut a huge dent in the. This is in the outer fairing, not in the
pressure side.
Hull.
The side. In other words, we'll call it a side rail. Okay.
Right. Okay. Whatever. And so the foredeck was also cut back, just wide enough for a man to walk up it rather than having it completely the same width as the sub, the same beam.
Uh-huh.
Because, like I say, the Type 9s, which this is a 9C, they would hang on the water, which is what got U-515 was almost captured. And that's when Dan Gallery realized he could maybe catch a submarine, and they captured U-505 on the 4th of June, 1944, because it wasn't diving very fast. This one was in the shipyards getting that cutout done.
Mm-hmm.
It came at an easy time anyhow, because prior to this, it was on war patrol under a different skipper, Langa. Not Langa from U-505, but what the heck was his name? Kurt Langa, I think. Anyhow, they were in combat with a convoy, and one of the tankers turned and smashed them on the bow, and the boat went down to about 240 meters. That's 900 feet down. And it just pretty well tore up the bow. So when they got back, it was easy just to continue cutting it up and making it look like that so it could dive faster.
The skipper pulled that boat back up off the bottom, or nearly the bottom?
It wasn't even the bottom. I mean, they were over Mother Ocean. If
wow.
he hadn't caught it when he did, it would have gone down to Davy Jones' locker.
Yeah.
But this was the other skipper. This was before Wermuth. Wermuth was the first officer on the boat at that time.
Hmm. What tanker hit them? Whose tanker?
Hit them, yeah, sure.
Whose tanker?
The one they were trying to attack. I don't know if it was an American or a British, probably an American tanker.
That's close quarters. Wow.
Yeah, oh, yeah. The German U-boats got in close. They'd fire from 300, 400 yards away. And it was hard to miss. Mm-hmm. Some boats, you know, from other navies, I don't want to offend any of our listeners, but they'd see a smudge of smoke on the horizon, fire six torpedoes, claim they sank two battleships and an aircraft carrier, and go home and get a medal. The Germans, they went right in there. And in the case of guys like Otto Kretschmer, who was a good friend of mine, I had a sleeping room in his house, he get inside the convoy. Nobody could get him. The destroyers couldn't depress their guns enough to get down to shoot at him. They're certainly not going to be throwing depth charges in the middle of a convoy. And he'd be running around on the surface.
Wow. Wow, right on the surface, visible at night. They could have picked him up easily with a spotlight.
If they could find out where
to point
the spotlight.
If they could find him, yeah. Wow.
But the thing that the advantage the submarines had, they had a very low silhouette and a very narrow silhouette. So Kretschmer's favorite trick was to keep the stern pointed at the destroyers, and they just couldn't see him. And the boats sat low enough in the water to where they didn't get up and break the horizon, so they couldn't see them from the deck of a destroyer.
Got it.
You're looking kind of down. So, until the better radar came along, then of course you couldn't do it. But Kretschmer was out of the war by that time anyhow. So, yeah, and he got hit by the tanker, and the boat was sinking, and he caught it at 240 meters.
Wow.
And,
that's getting near terminal depth, isn't it?
Yes, it is, sure. American subs couldn't go that deep. American subs, when they say take it deep, they mean about 300 feet or so. And this guy was at 240 meters, which is about 900 feet deep.
Wow.
The biggest difference is that in the early stages, everybody else's submarines were riveted construction. U-boats were all welded. Another one of our members, U-81, he took the boat down to see how low. This was the second skipper. This was Hanno Krieg. When the first skipper got his Knight's Cross, got transferred off to another skipper, another boat. He took the boat down. It was down darn near 1,000 feet. And with the noise it was making, they decided they better end the experiment and come back upstairs. And he told us about it because he was a member, Johann Otto Krieg, Hanno Krieg, they called him. But his chief radio man, Jerry Richter, Gerhard Richter, he was a member, and he lived right near me here in Florida. And he's passed on now, but he said, when they got to the surface and got into port, it looked like an old farm horse that was underfed with all the ribs sticking out because it had puckered this inch-thick steel around all the ribs. And, and if they'd have gone down another 10 or 20 feet, it would have been game over.
That's a pretty gutsy experiment. All right, we've got a document here. Oh, let me say one other thing. For you younger people and maybe some of your older people who'd like to see what I would call the most realistic reenactment of U-boat service, the movie, Das Boot, would be one to see. That's it, right? What did the U-boat crewmen think of that film, the ones you talked to?
Well, that's interesting. That came out around 1988, and that was our first trip over to Germany, and so we met with a lot of U-boat commanders, including Carl Friedrich Merten, who had the Knight's Cross with Oakleaf, Reinhard Hardagen, who had the Knight's Cross with Oakleaf, and he's still alive. He'll be 105 pretty quick and in good condition. And a lot of the other ones, boy, you mentioned Das Boot, they start foaming at the mouth. They boycott the movie. They're terrible, terrible. And then you pin them down and they'll tell you it was a wonderful movie, technically excellent, but they didn't like Buchheim, the guy that wrote the book that the movie came from. Not because of anything there with that movie, Das Boot, but his next book, I don't remember the title in German, but it translates to "We're Winning Until They Kill Us." And it was a left-handed slap in the face to Admiral Dönitz. And he was like a father to these guys. You badmouth Admiral Dönitz and your dog doo-doo.
So I got it. Yeah.
They just hated Buchheim.
But technically speaking, the film was right on.
Oh, the film was fantastic. And the skipper of the boat that was portrayed in the movie, he did not get killed. That was Heinrich Lehmann Willenbrook, was the skipper of U-96, the Smiling Sawfish, the one that took Buchheim out on a patrol. He was a member of Shark Hunters until he died. Mm. So unlike the movie, he didn't get killed in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to be the flotilla commander of the 9th Flotilla, and then after that he commanded U-256 when they ran off to Norway when the French bases were being overrun by the American and British armies.
Right. What a story. What an incredible story that nobody knows much of anything about, but thanks for Shark Hunters. It's there.
Yeah. We tell all this in our magazine that comes out almost every month, 9 times a year, and also in a lot of the books that we do. We've
and
got
DVDs.
Books out about U-boat history.
How many DVDs you got now?
Oh, God. About 150.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an incredible resource if you want to really explore history as it happened, not as Hollywood would tell you or some others with vested interests would tell you.
You mean the gatekeepers?
I didn't say anything. Nothing.
We don't mean George of the Jungle there, do we?
No. It's all there, though, for you. If you want to look and just travel, time travel, and these were such brave men on all services. Yeah. They were brave, heroic men, of course. But especially
on all the services on all the sides.
That's what I mean.
When you join the military, like I did, you write a blank check to your government, payable for whatever they want, up to and including your life, if that's what's necessary.
Absolutely.
God, when I was in, there was no shooting going on, but I felt cheated. I wanted to get into a shooting war. I was an 18-year-old kid. What do you want? I was an 18-year-old kid. I wanted to go kill communists because we were told there were horrible, evil people in Russia. And they told me I couldn't kill any Russians because we didn't have a war going on. I felt cheated. Now, you know, a lot of Russians are members of Shark Hunters, including the last commander-in-chief of the Soviet Navy. And as I tell people, Я вас почетный русский подводник. I'm an honorary Russian submarine officer. I've been over there many times. So the average guy in uniform is the same as the guy across the battlefield in most cases.
Got it.
In World War II.
That's right. Yep. All right. Hold on, Harry. We have to pause. And to all of you out there, stay with us. We'll be right back.